It's time, Fort Wayne. Your sports, your station. It's the Sports Rush with Brett Rump. Covering all the topics that hit a nerve here in the Summit City.
Clark, 11-yard touchdown!
Only on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Now, here's your host, Brett Rump.
The greatest, most interesting, most important person of all time.
You are incredible!
Well, listen, you're older than I'm wise.
Yeah, well, you're half right.
What is this, amateur hour?
This is going to be huge.
I believe this is going to be our finest hour.
Just when I think you said the stupidest thing ever, you keep talking.
I think that's the worst thing I've ever heard.
That boy ain't right.
The simplest way to put it, I have problems.
Welcome to the alleged show.
Y'all ready for this?
Thank God it's...
To a sports weekend. Pump yourself up, get ready for it. It is the Sports Rush, your daily local sports fix, 4 to 6. I am Brett Rump along with Adam Lundy, and coming up on the show, hour number two, we've got Dylan Sin giving us his thoughts about a recap on the Purdue and IU basketball seasons. Maybe we'll ask Dylan his expert picks for this weekend in the Sweet 16 and the Elite 8. Also, we've got Shane Alberani to give us a preview of the Rapid City Rush. We only need to talk one team this week because the Comets play the same team 3 days in a row, all at home. And Rapid City and the Comets used to be this rivalry. What's that been, 10, 15 years ago? Time flies when you get to my age. Everything that seems like it was just a couple of years ago was like 10 years ago, 15 years ago. Probably why I end up taking three or four clues to get Tuesday Time Capsule Trivia, when in my younger days, I could have nailed it on like clue number two. But welcome to the show. Glad to have you on board. Our text line, Parkview Sports Medicine text line, always open for your questions, comments, or suggestions at 46862. That's 46862. Extra pumped up this weekend. Plenty of hoops on tap. You've got the Elite Eight. So we find out who our final four will be by the time we return to work on Monday. We also find out who our four state champions are going to be at the IHSAA boys basketball. And among the participants this weekend down at Cambridge Fieldhouse, the Blackhawk Christian Braves will be taking on the Linton Stockton Miners. And Linton Stockton, with only one loss, 29-1. And that one loss was to a team from Kentucky. So they're undefeated against Indiana competition. So a tall task ahead of the Blackhawk Christian Braves. We're going to actually hear Matt Ross' conversation with Justin Kenny from the Coaches Show a couple days ago. We're going to throw that into the show today because I thought it was really good stuff. And Matt Roth has been great with media. I mean, very forthcoming, very open, shares a lot of the emotional connection that he has personally, plus that the team and the school and the program has with Mark Davidson. I think there were some great things said, and it will get us a preview of what to expect with Blackhawk Christian taking on Linton Stockton. So we'll hear from Matt Roth and replay that conversation coming up in about 30 minutes or so from now. What drama last night? You know, maybe that's what's got me all pumped up today, is last night. What an opening act in the NCAA tournament, huh? Three great games.
Yeah, hard not to be pumped up after last night.
And not only that, but of course, we've got to celebrate the FAU Owls. How about those Owls? You know, it should be no surprise to anybody that listens to this radio show that the FAU Owls have made it into the Elite Eight, and I think they're on their way to the Final Four. I think they're going to win the next game. I'm feeling really good about this basketball team, because last night, against a really tough defensive team that had them locked down for the first half. And I don't want to say had them on their heels, but to show the toughness to come back, and after scoring 22 points in the first half, to be able to come back and score 40 against that defense, oh, you got to feel good about who? Yeah, the FAU Owls. You know, the country has figured out what we've known on this show for over 2 months now. Early January, I returned from my Christmas vacation down in Boca Raton, and I came back and said, watch for the FAU Owls. They've got a heck of a basketball team. They had just pretty much pasted the Northern Kentucky Norse, and And I could tell the vibe down there. People were buzzing about FAU basketball. Now, here's the thing. I talked earlier this week about whether FAU could become the next Gonzaga, which I truly think they've got the potential to do that. But then I started thinking last night, you know, who also you could compare them to is Florida Gulf Coast. Remember when they had their magical run? Andy Enfield, their coach, you know, good looking younger coach. What happened? He got hired to USC. FGCU ended up kind of fading away. Now, there is one advantage with FAU over FGCU, and that is that FAU is truly near the ocean. You know, Florida Gulf Coast, it's a bit of a misnomer because their university is not right by the water. I mean, it's like 15 miles from the actual coastline of Fort Myers Beach, which might be a good thing after that hurricane went through there last year. But I thought, okay, so you could have FAU the next Florida Gulf Coast, or you could have FAU the next Gonzaga. There's the potential there. Now, a lot of it depends on whether or not the coach stays. Dusty May, the former IU student manager who worked in the program under head coach Bobby Knight, ended up getting experience from a number of pretty reputable coaches, including Brad Stevens, who also was inducted into the Indiana Basketball Hall of Fame last night. So congratulations to Brad Stevens. But, how do you not love that team? They play hard every possession. They share the basketball. They're tough. They don't make excuses. I mean, it is so fun to watch a team like that, which is not one of your blue blood programs. They just come in. They go to work every day. They're self-made players. They've spent time in the gym improving their games. They're all good shooters. They all can score. They play with such confidence, even when they shouldn't have had confidence because Tennessee was making them kind of look bad. They still just came out, played their game, played hard, never affected them on the defensive end. And I made this comment at halftime that I thought it was a real positive that FAU, despite having a terrible offensive first half and all the struggles that they went through in that first 20 minutes, scoring only 22 points, that they were only down by five. Because what they didn't do is let defense be affected by their lack of offense. And a lot of teams, that's really hard to overcome because you lose that little bounce, right? You get that little bounce of energy when you're seeing the ball go through the hoop. And sometimes it affects your defense when the ball's not going through the hoop. It didn't happen to FAU last night. They stayed in the game and they ultimately came back and won it.
Yeah, certainly did not affect their defense whatsoever. Two Tennessee players scored 10 points, but other than that, everybody else on the team was held to single digits.
Yeah, and a couple of the big weapons of late for Tennessee, who of course did play without their starting point guard. I understand he tore his ACL.
Yes.
He's out, but he was out before, and they won a couple of games. So, but they took care of that. Now, here's what it came down to. I mean, I thought, what a job for a backup to step in and basically score 8 straight points and flip the entire game. What was it? Forrest is his name. He comes in and changes the game, hits 2 threes back to back, and then hits a layup, and he scores 8 points in like 30 seconds. Next thing you know, it goes from being a 39-35 deficit to being a 43-39 lead, a 2-possession advantage. And FAU never looked back. They never let Tennessee get on top once again. They had that 8-point run from a backup guard. I mean, that just tells you the depth of this team, so many different players that can score. And in fact, he scored those 8 points. I'm not sure, did he score, 2 points the rest of the game or something? Or did he score?
Yeah, 3 points. Yeah,
the
he
rest
finished
of the
with
game.
11, yeah.
Yeah. But that 8-point run in those 30 seconds was magical, and it was everything that FAU needed. They just needed some kind of a burst because they were continually staying that 6, 5, 6, 7 points down. And they got it to 4, and then boom. Blink of an eye, 2 threes, and a driving layup. Timeout Tennessee, and the Vols never recovered. Man, fun to watch last night, huh?
Gotta love it.
You were locked in on the Owls.
I was watching. I mean, I did take the Volunteers in our redo of the bracket, but that was just me playing it safe.
Well, what's interesting, okay, on the air you took one set of teams.
when I pulled up your bracket, you had a different group of teams. And I'm wondering, did you click that magical save picks button?
Ooh, I might not have done that.
Oh, man. You know what happens when you don't save picks? It automatically defaults to the public vote.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, and we all know, based on the listener's bracket. This is our listener's bracket, right?
Yep. Yeah.
Listener's bracket, what did they take? Tennessee.
Mm.
I tried to tell them.
You tried to tell them about the Owls.
It was my buddy, Paul. Remember the guy I used to umpire with?
Yeah.
And I tried to tell him, I said, Paul, that's not a good pick. Got to let you go.
Yeah,
got to move on.
Had to get him off the line.
Had to get him off the line because it was just, no, Paul, you're not helping the cause at all by picking Tennessee. Then we had Phil pick Michigan State. That didn't work out.
Phil.
On the other side, you had UConn. That
was good.
That wasn't too bad. That game was a blowout.
Yeah.
And UCLA. Our listeners ended up with one right.
Man, some crazy games, though. I mean, that Michigan State-Kansas State one.
Now, I can say this. That whatever's online actually was better than what you said on the show.
Well, then we'll go with what's online.
Because you hit 3 out of 4 online.
All right.
And I think you were 2-2 on the show.
Oh, yeah. The online one for
sure. Yeah, so you'll go ahead and take whatever the mistake was.
Yeah, the one on air will just get deleted.
Yeah,
you'll never hear it again.
Deleted for the podcast. And I hit 3 out of 4. The only one I missed was the UCLA-Gonzaga game, which
man.
I thought there for, 5 seconds, I thought I had the winner, man. What a comeback in that game.
Yeah, that was quite the matchup there, quite the game.
And Gonzaga flipped it.
Yeah.
Because UCLA was owning the game, was up, 16 points?
Something like that. Yeah.
Yeah, 15, 13, I don't know. It was double digits. And then all of a sudden, Gonzaga goes on that tear. UCLA literally could not score a basket. They went, 11 minutes or something without even making a field goal?
Yeah.
And Gonzaga took full control of that game, had a 10-point lead with 2 minutes and something left. And then back comes UCLA behind the guy that sounds like he's clearing his throat, Javi Jaquez. He hit 2 3-point plays. You're not supposed to foul a guy in that situation. When you're up comfortably in a final minute or two, do not give the guy an opportunity to add extra points at the free throw line with the clock stopped where they could set up the full court press. Don't do it. And what did they do? They did it. So Gonzaga, in some ways, paid for their mistakes, but then they made up for them by hitting that 3-pointer from the logo, literally from the logo. At center court. I don't know if they ever measured it, if you ever heard, but it had to be 29 feet.
At least.
And, here's what I found interesting. After the game, Mark Few admitted that they stole that play from Villanova.
Right.
And, of course, we all remember Chris Jenkins hitting the bucket to win the national championship.
Certainly.
Where the guard comes in, drives in, kicks back to the trailer, he sinks it. But you know who the first one was that ran that play? And I don't know if there's a trail where they took it from someone, but think about the play. Guard brings it down the court in a hurry, penetrates inside the foul line, and then flips it back to a trailer who takes the 3-point shot. Oh, come on, Adam. You're not that old.
Is it Gordon Hayward?
Or that young.
Gordon Hayward missing the shot to win the game?
No.
Oh, because they did that.
Wah, 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 wah.
They did it then, didn't they?
Yeah, that was similar.
Yeah.
But the one I'm thinking about went in and won the game in a huge court storming. Bloomington, IU, Kentucky.
Oh, there you go. Okay.
Think of the similarities in what Villanova did with Jenkins.
Yeah.
And what IU did with Watford. It's almost like, okay, so Villanova took it from IU and then Gonzaga took it from Villanova. So at this point, every coach in America should be alerted. Guard the inbounder. Don't let him, if he's trailing the play, have somebody pick him up when he comes across half court. Because the problem was UCLA didn't pick him up, stayed back, waited for him to get to the 3-point line. He didn't need to get to the 3-point line. He launched it from a long way out and nailed it. And Gonzaga took the win. And then Tiger Campbell, who had a terrible second half, He was so good in the first half, and then the second half just could not get it going.
No.
And then he comes racing it into the front court and goes to pull up to shoot and had the ball stripped from his hands. And that's how you ended up with a 3-point final margin. But it's once again Gonzaga and FAU. A lot of similarities there. But here's the thing. If you're going to have a dynasty, where would you want that dynasty to be? Where do you think five-star prospects are more likely to go live for the next 4 years of their life? Spokane, Washington, or Boca Raton, Florida? It's no contest, right? Now, the only thing is, when you're in Spokane, you can actually play in a real arena. Because FAU is still playing in what is basically a little bit of an oversized gate center. Like 3,300 seats.
Tell you what, winning...
But it's basketball in Florida. Remember, that you know, that's the difference. It's
Basketball
in Florida. And until you win 33 games, nobody goes. All of a sudden, they didn't have enough room for everybody that wanted tickets. They were stuffing people in there like sardines for the last six or seven home games.
Couple texts on the Parkview Sports Medicine text line, 46862. Somebody said, how about those Owls? Rumpy won me some money. That's from Drewski.
Huh?
Yep. Someone else texted in, I really tried to like Tom Izzo, but after every big tournament loss, he cries about something.
Here's the thing. Watch the interview or see the sound bites, because the sound bites might just pick up a clip or two where maybe he's saying something about the officials or about, maybe. What did he say about Noel? That he said something about him that was kind of taken out of context, because I watched a longer clip of his press conference and I thought he handled the loss pretty well. And so I think before I say anything negative about anything that Tom Izzo said, I would recommend watch the entire press conference. There's a YouTube where you get almost the entire press conference. I think it was on YouTube where I found it. I either found it on YouTube or Twitter. But you can find that. And he went through, and multiple times he kept crediting how well Kansas State played. And he said, I thought we played well. I thought they played, better, and they played a really good game. They deserved to win. I thought he handled the loss pretty well last night. And I will say this. The Tennessee-FAU game, god-awful officiated. I mean, it fortunately, it didn't make a difference because it was bad for both teams.
Mm-hmm.
But there were some obvious calls that were just completely blown. I mean, guys just hacking the middle of a forearm and no call. There was an out-of-bounds play right in front of where the TV broadcast position was that was just obviously off one team and they gave it to the other. I mean, it was just bad. And so I thought it kind of surprising that when you're actually filtering down, supposedly having the best of the best, but... Remember, that game did have a Big Ten official that worked the game.
Yeah, the
he was involved in a couple of those calls, by the way.
The Izzo comments that drew a little bit of ire were, he said, give Kansas State credit. They banked in two shot clock threes. They made some big plays, but some of those big plays weren't big plays. They were lucky plays.
And that's true. I mean, to me, there's nothing sour about that. If you play defense for 29 and a half seconds, and the best shot that you give up is a guy throwing up a prayer that banks in, their luck, and you played well. And I think he was making the point that we were playing some good defensive possessions that weren't being rewarded because Kansas State hit some lucky shots at the end of the shot clock. What's wrong with that? I mean...
People will take it as, oh, you're saying they don't have any skill.
It wasn't like sour grapes, but you're right. That was the comment I heard where somebody said... I can't believe, and this is the way Twitter interprets things.
Right.
I can't believe that Izzo, rather than giving credit to Marquise Noel, he is saying that he was lucky. He specifically said how good their, Noel played. He said he was unbelievable. And he was 20 points, 19 assists, an NCAA tournament record.
That's 19, crazy.
19 assists.
Yeah.
You know what I was going to do today? I forgot to do it.
What?
maybe somebody sitting at home watching this, maybe even someone or listening to this, maybe even someone who's retired and has nothing else to do could sit at the computer and look up some stats. I'm wondering how many games this year Purdue-Fort Wayne didn't have 19 assists as a team. 19 assists is a good number for a team. He had 19 assists himself with 20 points, and it also means, you know, to get an assist, you got to have teammates that are making shots.
Certainly does.
Unreal. What a night. What a night. I mean, what was the game of the night?
I'd give it to UCLA Gonzaga just because that shot was so crazy at the end there.
The two shots. Let's not forget, UCLA came down.
Yeah.
And after being down 10, they took the lead with, what, 7 seconds or 8 seconds? Whatever.
Just
10
about.
Seconds?
Yeah,
11
seven,
seconds?
Yeah.
I don't know. It was final seconds. They came down and took the lead on that three-pointer. And so, the back and forth and the comeback in the last 2 minutes to come from 10 down.
Yeah.
You had to count on Gonzaga missing some free throws. They did. Drew Timmy had been terrific all night, but did nothing in that last couple minutes.
Yeah, those free throws there would have sealed it, I think, by Timmy. But had to add a little more drama.
Yeah, he knows how to draw some attention.
Get those viewers up.
Get those viewers. Get the ratings. Yeah, maybe that will bring some dollars in the NBA contract. Is Drew Timmy an NBA player?
He is projected second round.
Second round.
Yes.
That's not necessarily an NBA player. I think if you're a lottery pick, you're a guarantee. If you're first round, you've got a shot at being a role player, maybe getting into the starting lineup. If you're a second rounder, there's no guarantee you're ever going to play in the NBA. A lot of second rounders end up wearing G League uniforms.
Yeah.
So if you're projected as a second rounder, there's a real question mark about your future fitting in with the NBA. And that's why I'm asking about Drew Timmy, because Drew Timmy does a lot of the same stuff that Trayce Jackson-Davis does on the basketball court. Now, Timmy might step out and hit mid-range a little bit more and stuff like that, but a lot of his moves, you know, the spin moves from down low, the over the left shoulder, little jump hook, he does a lot of the things that Trayce Jackson-Davis does on a basketball court, and yet he's being kind of perceived in the same range as what Trayce Jackson-Davis is possibly going to be going in the NBA draft. 46862 is Parkview Sports Medicine text line, 46862. We got nothing else going on. We've got all day. Let's go ahead and check headlines, find out what's happening in the world of sports with Adam Lundy.
All right, thank you, Brett. Let's get in today's top headlines. Well, you heard yesterday about Buddy Hield being fined $25,000 for flipping the bird on the court. Well, today, All-Star Dallas Maverick Luka Doncic was fined $35,000 by the NBA for making a hand gesture towards the refs that insinuated they had been paid off.
Yeah, he gave the little money, the Johnny Manziel money symbol.
8 former Cy Young Award winners are scheduled to start opening day for the MLB next Thursday, including a matchup between reigning National League winner Sandy Alcantara and 3-time honoree Max Scherzer, whose Mets travel to face the Miami Marlins. And although most eyes and ears will be on March Madness tonight, the Indiana Pacers also play basketball tonight. They're in Boston for a 7 p.m. tip-off against the Celtics. The Pacers will try to win against the current second seed in the East without Tyrese Haliburton and Chris Duarte, both out with injuries. And those are your top stories today, Brett.
A lot of Pacers that are missing games because of injuries, as the Pacers are knocking on the doorsteps of getting into a play-in. Is it a tank?
It's a little too late.
But they're sitting only about a game out. Now it's a game and a half. But it's been this way for a couple of weeks. In fact, they were in the playoff spot a couple of weeks ago. So here's my question is, if the Pacers really were wanting a playoff spot, would these guys be playing? Or are they sitting out because the Pacers are very content and very satisfied with being outside the playoffs and getting into the lottery? You almost feel like perhaps, little bit. It's not like a bold upfront tank, but it's we don't care to compete right now. If we lose, we lose. 46862 is Parkview Sports Medicine text line. Those were today's top headlines with Adam Lundy.
You're listening to The Sports Rush with Brett Rump on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM.
Back on the Sports Rush, your daily local sports fix, 4 to 6, Brett Rump with Adam Lundy. And, the women are now on the court for their Sweet 16. And right now, we just got a text. We've got it on in the studio. And it is, what, 59-58?
Yeah, Miami had been up by about almost 20 points for a good majority of this game, but Villanova storming back and has just tied the game on the first of two free throws here.
Got a chance to take the lead over the team that knocked out the Indiana Hoosiers.
And they just did.
And they did. Play-by-play of the women's game.
Life here on the Sports Rush.
Yeah, we... two free throws for Villanova, and they now lead it 60-59. How much time's left? I can't see the screen from here.
5:20.
There you go. So, so the women are playing their Sweet 16 one day behind the men. They'll wrap that up on Monday, and then next weekend, of course, we've got the Final Four. Will Levis had his pro day today, by the way.
Didn't get to see it.
I got a chance to see some of his throws. I mean, I couldn't sit and watch Will Levis, but I had a chance to see, you know, you go to Twitter and you search Will Levis and you try to see if you can come up with what's the best and the highlights, because, you know, ultimately pro days are so scripted.
Yeah.
That every quarterback is going to do what his strengths are and try to avoid doing what his weaknesses will reveal, right?
Right.
And so, like, if you're not accurate on 15-yard crossing routes, you probably won't see a lot of 15-yard crossing routes at the pro day. And so, you know, there are just certain things you might pick up, like arm strength.
Yeah.
He has got one hell of an arm.
Throwing some bullets.
Just deep. They threw two long passes. The first one, he threw it about 62 yards in the air, and the second one went about 65 yards in the air.
Wow.
And one of them was almost a perfect throw. I mean, the receiver, whether he was on full sprint or just made it look like he was still on full sprint, but the ball dropped right into the breadbasket. And then the other one was maybe a yard or two underthrown, but that was the longer throw.
Right.
And it was what they call a breakdown type scramble play, where he went back, went to throw, and then had to scramble out of the pocket. The receiver then broke off his route, went deep, and he let it sail. In fact, I think that was the last throw of the day. I don't know. They gave high fives at the end of the Twitter video I watched, so I'm assuming maybe it was the last throw. But, man, he really can throw it. Now, the other thing about it, he is a big dude. I mean, he's like Andrew Luck type big. And I don't take this wrong, and don't start adding me on the text line. I'm not comparing Will Levis to Andrew Luck, okay? What I'm saying is he's that kind of a body. He's like 6'4", 6'5", big arms. Looks like he spent a lot of time lifting some weights. Pretty ripped. And he looks like you'd expect a body to look when a guy would have a pro day for tight end. And he's the quarterback. And so I thought that was pretty impressive, especially after seeing C.J. Stroud, not exactly the bulkiest of quarterbacks, and then seeing Bryce Young, who looks like basically any quarterback you're going to see working out in some of the sports performance facilities. So to me, it was pretty clear that Levis is – physically, a big body, strong arm. You know, is he a Josh Allen? I don't know that Levis is quite as athletic as Josh Allen. I don't believe him to be. I would think, though, minus the running, that it might be a good comparison. A guy who can really let it fly, has a strong arm, big body, but at times has accuracy and decision-making question marks. Right? I mean, isn't that how you would describe Josh Allen?
Yeah, I think that's a fair comparison. I mean, we're not saying he's the next Josh Allen, but it's just a similar game.
As a throwing quarterback,
yes.
My comp, from what I saw on two Twitter videos, because that made me an expert.
Of course.
Everybody is an expert after seeing two Twitter videos, right?
That's how you become an
expert.
That's
how you become an expert. You get one opinion, and generally that's just a headline. And then you become the Twitter expert and tell everybody else exactly how it is. Make it sound like fact. But, I mean, I've obviously seen Levis play. Haven't really paid that close of attention when I was watching Kentucky because I didn't think about the Colts drafting a quarterback and all this. I wasn't thinking ahead. But the arm strength, I thought, was pretty impressive. 46862 is Parkview Sports Madison text line, 46862. Got to get a break in. We're going to have Matt Roth and a replay of the conversation the Blackhawk Christian coach had on our coach's show, the season finale of the coach's show that was just a couple of nights ago, talking about the season for Blackhawk Christian, talking about the impact of Mark Davidson, and a preview of Linton Stockton. So we're going to have that for you coming up after the break. Blackhawk Christian boys basketball as they prep for the state championship game in 2A coming up on Saturday. Matt Roth is the head coach of the Braves. Coach, how are you?
Hey, we're doing well. Thanks for having me on tonight.
Yes, sir, buddy. And congratulations getting this team and to the state championship game, taking on Linton Stockton on Saturday. Let's talk about the process. It's a long season. We always talk about how fast it goes. I don't know if it goes as fast for coaches, but through the course of the season from November now into late March, how has this team matured, progressed, and now getting ready to play for a 2A state title?
Yeah, they've had a tremendous year. I mean, it's been a year of growth for them. Obviously, a major deal of change from, you know, just the familiar face of Coach Davidson that they all know and love so well. They've done a tremendous job. We've handled it in stride. Early in the year, there was a ton of emotion, and it led us to just focusing on keeping basketball simple. You know, when I was interviewing for the job, I had said I thought basketball would be the easiest part of the job. It would be the handling of emotion, because different things hit all these guys. They're all, you know, 14, 15 to 18 year old men, young men, who are growing. And I think if there's one thing that we know, about young men at that level, is they all handle, loss and tragic situations differently and at different times. And so the year started out with just the focus on being simple and being true to who we are as a community there at Blackhawk, keeping our faith as our priority, building each other up, praying for each other, and keeping basketball simple and fun. And that kind of got us started into the month of November, and it was a sprint. You know, you look at our schedule and having the Southside game move up due to some scheduling things. I mean, we played 3/4 of our games on the front half of the season. And so it's really, you know, we had a stretch there where we were banged up coming out of the holiday break. And we come out of the North Davies holiday break. And we've got South Bend, St. Joe, Concordia, Homestead, you know, all kind of right in a row in a 7-day stretch, from Tuesday to Tuesday. And we got through that. We weren't at 100%. You know, we played a lot of basketball. We traveled a lot. And guys were getting a little worn down. And so we continued to battle. We faced, some adversity with two great opponents in Wayne. And that's a game that really, you know, from a preparation standpoint, prepped us so mightily for Gary 21st. And then when you play, you know, Coach Kostoff and Dwenger, you know, you're going to be in for just a physical battle for 32 minutes, and being shorthanded in that game due to some injuries. You know, we gave it our all, but they had a great group. They were just getting hot to make that tremendous run that Coach Kostoff had those Dwenger guys on. They got them all the way to that semi-state this past weekend. So we got out of that, and then the season, from a coaching standpoint, really just slowed down, where, you know, our weeks became longer. We had more time and practice to focus on, you know, ourselves, focus on what do we need from a basketball standpoint, and then also it gave us that opportunity to really dive into our opponents and start to kind of get that, what we called our postseason focus, where, you know, where we've got multiple days to prep, we've got scouting report, you know, player personnel, everything is really detailed and we're locked in. And so that for us was fortunate to be kind of the month of February. It was spread out, you know, it was, you know, we came out of the Wayne game. We had 10 days between games, which we hadn't had more than a day or two between games to that point. And so it was a sprint, and at the same time it was long because it was all about just keeping it simple and loving these guys well. And I think they really embraced that. And because of that, we got in the nice groove of playing really good basketball. And, you know, I think we entered the postseason still from a coaching standpoint. We hadn't started to click in terms of what it was going to take to get to where we are now. And so the guys, they've been hungry. We've gotten better. You know, these extra weeks of practice, we've gotten better every day, individually and collectively. I think that is going to lead to, you know, a special opportunity to go play for a state title on Saturday.
Coach, how have you been able to maybe put your mark on this program, but also honoring Mark Davidson, the late Mark Davidson, and staying true to what he set and the expectations in terms of this program? So how have you kind of balanced those two things?
No, I think it's been a pretty smooth process. I mean, it's a process that works. It's a process that I was fortunate enough to see for 3 years, you know, being side by side in the practices and the preparations of three full seasons. You know, seeing the postseason success is each of those years we advanced to the regional level, and seeing what that process looks like. And it's, you know, in a lot of ways helped mold me as a coach into what do I want to be. You know, what do I want to try and do with these guys? And we stayed true to that. You know, we kept basketball simple, fun. We've kept the main thing in terms of our faith and our walk with the Lord, that these guys have such a firm foundation in of what we do. And those are things that, in my opinion, should never change. And I know those were part of the reasons why I think Mark and I had such a great friendship over the years of what works and what's really important for these kids. And, you know, whether we make it to where we're at now or whether we get upset, you know, a week or two ago, I mean, it's not going to change the quality of these seven seniors that I've got this year. And it's not going to change the quality of the guys who are working their tail off behind the scenes to get their opportunity here in the years to come. So the biggest thing to echo home to the boys early in the year was, like, it doesn't need to change. It shouldn't change. What we have going is it's working. It's going to continue to work. We just had to continue to trust in what we had. You know, we've got a very talented bunch. We've got a great mix of veterans that are battle tested, as mature as a group as you could have, as three senior starters, physically, mentally, emotionally. And then we've got talented youth that you've got to sprinkle in, and for those two to mesh well together is what leads to a successful year. And they've done that. They've trusted each other. They've built each other up, and it's put us in this situation.
Coach, wanted to ask you about one of your players in particular. It can always be difficult to be the brother of a top athlete. And we always talked about Josh first and people, oh, that's Caleb's brother, right? But how he has emerged last season and particularly this season as his own person, as a basketball player. And now he's Josh first. He's going to walk on at Purdue, but he's been a tremendous player for you. Dropped 30 in that Gary 21st Century game on Saturday. Just a guy that really has come into his own after being kind of the quiet guy, even kind of like Caleb being the quiet guy, but now has really kind of emerged as his own person, his own player, as a basketball player. And just talk about that emergence of him being very much a key, maybe the key to this run for your team.
Yeah, I mean, he's a tremendous young man. You know, they're very similar in so many ways, both he and Caleb, but they're also so different in just terms of how they do things. And you know, they just, their games are different. Their personalities are different, but they share, you know, common principles that are just so important to them, whether it be their walk, you know, with the Lord, whether it be, you know, academically. They're both incredible students. I mean, for Josh to be a first-team academic All-Stater, to be able to go walk on at Purdue, to be able to lead our team so well, and just be the reliable post presence, that I'm sure so many people are used to seeing from Caleb during his time there. And it's just a little bit different in terms of how he does it, but he's so efficient with it. And, you know, he's in a situation, and this is the beauty of it. I mean, Caleb had his, storied of a basketball career at Blackhawk as you could have. And at the end of the day, when the season's over Saturday afternoon, it's going to go down one way or the other in the record books of field goal percentage from the two-point land. It's going to be Caleb and Josh, or Josh and Caleb. And they are right there, and it just shows how hard they work at the game, how efficient they are in what they do, and how different they are doing it. And that's the beauty of it. But he's a tremendous young man. When the opportunity came and he told the coaching staff what he was going to do, I just thought it was a home run. He's going to fall in love with it at that level. You know, he wants to get into exercise science and strength and conditioning type stuff, and he's going to be getting to work with one of the best in the Big Ten there with the men's basketball program. I mean, he's going to have firsthand access to this stuff. I just think he's going to be somebody who can, from a walk-on, provide so much for their program, but also put himself in a position as he continues on beyond the game of basketball to be just so successful, which I think both he and his brother will be, because they're just tremendous young men.
Coach, you got Linton Stockton coming up on Saturday, battle for a 2A state championship. This team is undefeated in the state this season. Their lone loss came to a team out of Kentucky. In studying the minors, what have you seen, and what kind of game is this going to be?
Oh, they're fantastic. I mean, they've been on our radar all year, in part because of playing in that North Davies Invitational there at the holiday time, and having so many similar common opponents or even just, you know, a common goal of, you know, in that area of the state, you know, Winton and North Davies are as heated of a rivalry as you're going to find. And so, you know, you play one, you get the other type situation. And so you know how talented they are. We've seen them. They played in what was supposed to be an out-of-state game in Illinois that I think they played. It might have even been in Indiana. But the host was actually my high school that I grew up at. And so I follow that tournament every year. So I was aware of what they were doing. So they've been on our radar. They've got a great group. I mean, it's two-story programs. If you look at the last, you know, decade of Indiana basketball, these two are, you know, as successful in what they do. And so it's no surprise to me that, you know, we finally get the chance to meet up with them. And they're probably thinking likewise. I mean, with the runs that both programs have had, both being in Indianapolis at the same time in 2019. They've got an incredible senior class that's battle-tested, that's played on the big stage. And we've got an incredible senior class that's got all those same attributes. So I can't think of a better, you know, if I'm the people in Indianapolis with the state, I've got to be thrilled with this 2A matchup, because you've got two dangerous, high-volume, explosive offenses, but also two teams that can sit down and lock and guard, and it should make for a great game. I mean, the coach, the basketball fan, the basketball enthusiast that I am, I just, you know, let's play it today, let's play it tomorrow, and let's play it again on Saturday. They're a great opponent, and our guys are locked into what they do, and I have no doubt their guys are locked into what we do. So that's why you do the prep work. But at the end of the day, it's about, you know, two great programs, two great groups of young men. I mean, I've seen their interviews, I've heard their guys speak, and I think that, you know, they're just as quality of a group of individuals as we are. And so it's time to, you know, in my mind, let those kids get out there and compete and play the game they love. And I think it'll be a lot of fun on Saturday. Obviously my allegiance is with us, and I think we got a great group, but it's going to be a battle, and it's going to be a great 2A state title game.
Coach, before I let you go, year one back at Blackhawk Christian, head basketball coach. How's the family handle it? I know Lindsay can roll with it, but how are the kids? I'm sure they're loving being around a basketball court every day.
Oh, they love it. They and my guys are, they're so, I mean, it's a blessing. And for my kids to be with the group that we have, whether that be my varsity guys, Coach Boyer's JV guys, or Coach K's C team guys, they're tremendous to my kids. They love them well. They're in practice, they're on the bench at times, they're helping fill up water bottles, they're doing it all, they're jumping in shooting contests. I mean, I can't even understand of how this could be any better of a situation, with the exception of, you know, getting to do it one more time with Coach Davidson. It's just been a blessing for the kids. You know, they've been enrolled there. That's where our kids have been since and Tutson was first in school. And so for them, they're comfortable there. But now they get, you know, kind of free reins to the gym anytime that dad says gym's available. And they love it. They've got a great group of friends, and the way that my guys, my teammates that I have on my coaching staff, Coach Lindsay, Coach Moreland, the way they love my kids, it's a blessing to be there. And there's a lot of other people. I mean, Ann Laborde, our trainer, and my 4-year-old are best friends. And I don't know that either one knows what they're talking about when they're talking, but they love each other and they love to spend time together. So it's just, it's a perfect, situation for the kids and for our family. And it's been a great year one. But we're not done yet. We still got a lot of work to do here in the days to come. And we're just so excited for the opportunity on Saturday.
All right, buddy. I know state championship week. It's a hectic week, so I appreciate you taking some of the time to break down your team and getting ready for Linton Stockton, man. Good luck. Give the fame of my best. We'll catch up with you.
All right. Sounds good. Have a great night. Thanks for having me on.
All right, buddy. That was Matt Roth, head coach of the Blackhawk Christian Braves, here talking some basketball. The lone area basketball team playing for a state championship this weekend down at Gainbridge Fieldhouse. And you can hear Blackhawk Christian play in the state championship game around 12:45 on Saturday right here, 1380 The Fan, 100.9 FM.